It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
This morning after dropping off Trish, I saw somebody. There's a retirement home built real close to ACT now. And so a lot of old people go on walks through the campus because it's a real nice place to walk. And I saw a guy, and he had a VR headset on, like a full-on, like, Oculus kind of VR headset, and was walking kind of slow. And I was like, oh, what the hell is he doing? That's kind of neat. Wonder what's happening. And I get closer. No, he didn't. He had a flat gray cap, and his head was kind of down. And I was seeing the bill, and it happened to be the same color as, like, a VR headset. So he put his head up and like, oh no, he's not doing that. But that was funny. I wish what I was about to say was a joke or being glib or an exaggeration, but it is not. One of the worst and most traumatic things that can happen to me is an unexpected and extended loss of internet connection. It just fucks me up. And I am an absolute mess. And it seems really dumb for that to be the thing. But my life's real easy. So this thing. And mostly, everything I do is connected to the internet. Everything I do for entertainment, everything I do to, you know, sort of get stuff done and things, it's all online. When I'm not online, I can read. I can sleep. So imagine my shock when Sunday night the internet went to shit.
Yeah.
And couldn't get it fixed. And there were no outages reported in the area or anything. And so we finally went to bed. And in the middle of the night, I rolled over and looked. And down the hall, I can see one of our little Wi-Fi boxes. And there's a light on it, so they're white or red if it's bad. And it was white. And I was like, oh, it's better. And I looked at my phone, and I'm like, yeah, I got Wi-Fi back. Great. And it was like 2 in the morning, so I went back to sleep. Woke up in the morning, it wasn't good anymore. It was down again. Couldn't figure it out. I'm using the app, all the stuff. We tried to do a podcast because it came back for like an hour, and then we connected, and like 2 seconds in, and so, yeah, today is Tuesday, and Monday sucked. Yeah. And it was really bad because I went to therapy, and A, the person before me ran late, like pretty decently late, like later than it's ever been before, which is absolutely karma because I frequently push it late and normally wouldn't be a thing. But this day, I had to hurry and try and get home and swap out the modem before the cable company closed, the local office closed. And so we had a very short session because I finally talked to support themselves and they were like, here's 3 things we might do. First thing we're going to do is you give us an hour to fuck around on our end. Like, cause they couldn't connect to my modem. It was doing it intermittently, but like on their end, they're like, no, we can't get it to like say hi to us or whatever.
Oh.
And so they're like, I'm going to report this. And over the next hour or two, they're going to flip a bunch of switches and shit over here. And that might fix it. If that doesn't fix it, let's try swapping out the modem. Because maybe the modem is bad. Although the modem, we only had this modem for a year. So it seemed unlikely. Third option is there's probably something wrong with your actual coax cable. And we got to send a technician out who won't be out until the end of the day Thursday. So I was super not happy for this. I did not know what the hell I was going to do. A lot of reading, I guess. Like, I don't even know. It's really shocking how much I cannot live without the internet at this point. Unplanned. If I know in advance, if you tell me, Tony, all next week they're doing something, there's not going to be any internet. I mean, it's going to suck, but I can prepare. I will get books, we will get games, we will plan activities, things like that. But out of nowhere, fuck. Even a lot of the video game stuff, you have to connect. Like some, I theoretically could have played some video games, but a lot of them get crazy if they can't connect to the internet. And I did not think the modem was going to fix it because the modem's not that old. And our backyard is a sprawling jungle. It's entirely possible there's something fucked up with the coax. But I wanted to try it. So I came home immediately, still was doing weird. It would go up and down a little bit, but pretty much anytime you tried to do much of anything, it wouldn't work. I could occasionally watch YouTube, but everything else. But went and got the new modem, brought it back, plugged it in, called them, they activated it. We're golden. Hasn't been a problem since.
Cool. And since your modem wasn't very old, does do you have to, I mean, does
No,
that
I
mean you're
mean,
covered?
they owned it and they own this one. It's, yeah, we don't own our own hardware. We
Gotcha.
did used to own our own router, but now we've got their Wi-Fi, their Eero thing or whatever that came with it. So now we just use that. And yeah, it's real nice so far. And it's also got me wondering if something was going on with that modem. Maybe some, because in general, I was starting to have some issues with like the TV. It wouldn't not work, but it would be very slow to like load up things and stuff. And you and I still have that. I mean, at this rate, maybe I'd try using the Zoom client again, like the actual client.
Oh yeah.
Because maybe the issue was largely with that modem. I
Could
don't
be.
know. We'll see. But the
Could be.
point is, it works now. And immediately, because this was like right before I went to pick up Trish. And I was like, I have had an absolutely hellacious day, but now I'm almost giddy because the issue is gone. I'm very tired, but I'm done. And it turned out for unrelated reasons, she had an absolute shitty day too. And she was like, I'd been hoping maybe we could just go out to eat because I didn't even want to wait around. But I had done all the prep for dinner. But when she said that, I'm like, we'll eat it tomorrow. It'll keep in the fridge. So we went out to Shakespeare's, which was nice. And I had a poutine burger, which was really, really good. It was very tasty. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that I've thought this through is basically if Big Bird and the Kool-Aid Man made a wish on a haunted fortune teller machine to be human, and now one of them regrets it. I'm Tony.
I'm William, and this is episode 701. Which one of us regrets it?
Well, do you know which one you are?
I'm pretty sure I'm Big
Yeah. Do you regret being a human?
No.
Well, there you go. Except, do you regret being a human if instead you could be Big Bird?
No.
Really?
No,
Interesting.
I wouldn't rather be Big Bird. I
I
mean,
think Big Bird's got a pretty sweet life.
I know I like Big Bird and everything, but oh, did I ever tell you this? Oh, maybe I shouldn't tell you this story.
Did
Oh,
you have
sure,
sex with Big Bird?
I'll tell it to you. So, I'm a puppeteer, and I used to go to conventions and stuff. And one convention I went to down in Fort Lauderdale, they had some Muppet people there, and there was an exhibit, and I mean, when I say Muppet people, I mean people who worked with Jim Henson or whatever.
I do. I just like the phrase. I'm going to start using it as a slur on people. You're Muppet people.
Anyway, they had an exhibit, and the Big Bird puppet was there, and it had shed a few
I think you
feathers.
have told me this story.
So I just picked it up off
Stole
the
bits of
floor.
paper.
I did not I did not reach over and pluck one or anything like that. It was on the floor. It was going to get swept up and thrown away.
You got any witnesses that can corroborate this?
Well, I don't have any witness. I mean, I could just be making this story up. I'm not sure if I did it or didn't do it.
Oh, no, you've got big bird feathers. That a tremendous amount about you makes more sense now, knowing that you have big bird feathers.
I don't have it. I gave it to someone. In fact, that's the whole reason I picked it up, was because weirdly, I knew I knew someone who wanted one. Like, I don't know how this came about. I don't know if I was talking to the person before I was going down there and I told them. I mean, I don't remember knowing there was going to be, you know, a big bird or whatever there, but I might have told them that there was an exhibit, a Muppet exhibit there where they might have some of the puppets.
Get me a big bird feather, damn it.
I think they did. And then I was there.
So you were peer pressured into this.
And then I was there, and lo and behold, not only was the big bird thing there, but a feather was on the floor. I didn't even have to, and I wouldn't have.
Yeah.
I would not have, like, reached a pluck. I would not have done that.
Whatever. I mean, we all got to look ourselves in the mirror every day, so whatever.
It wasn't a big one either. It was just, and it wasn't a whole one. It was like, you know, a little piece of feather. It's like, all right.
Did he say ow?
I didn't. It was on the floor. When I got home, I gave it to this person. Okay.
Was Big Bird also on the floor, perhaps because you had knocked him down?
Nope. This person was thrilled with it. They thought, wow. And I think they were impressed that I would give it to them. But I mean, I guess it is a thing. Like, this is this was an actual big, you know, at least one of them that they used.
Definitely, right? A bird, and it was definitely large.
No, I'm just saying. This was a costume that was probably seen on television or anywhere else. And this was an actual feather, like, from this
bald patch.
Actual character, right? And so why wouldn't I want it? Well, I mean, it's because I'm not into that kind of thing. But this person was, like, just over the moon about it. So I was like, okay, cool.
There's a meme. I know nothing about its context or even how it is used, because I only ever see memes in the Jordan Breeding series videos. He just sneaks them in. That is, there's a white doorway, an interior doorway, and it gets knocked down, and behind it you see it was kicked down by Big Bird, and he's so tall, like, the top of his head is above the frame, but you just, and it's, like, horrifying, because he's not lit right or anything, and he just kicks in the door, and he's just standing there, and he's too big even for the door, and it's, like, scary looking. It's pretty funny.
Big Bird. I don't think I've ever been compared to Big Bird before, but I mean, I suppose
that
it's
is
apt.
Shocking.
No, I don't think I have. But...
You, I'll put it this way. I'm willing to believe you have not been compared to Big Bird to your face.
Yeah, you might be right about that.
Just big, round, and full of juice. And if I tilt too far, my blood comes out the top of my head.
That's your justification for comparing yourself to the Kool-Aid Man?
Anytime someone says my name, I do bust through the nearest wall to get to them.
And say, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And they're like, Randy Savage? And I'm like, no, the other one.
I mean, I feel like the thing I've been compared to has quite a bit of complexity and nuance that your character doesn't have, and I feel like that's not quite fair to you. You should be compared.
I mean,
to something.
I may have recently watched a weird history food video on the history of the Kool-Aid Man, which may have been what put this in. Coming up with these opening lines is not easy. I've done 701 of them. Like, this is not okay. I haven't done that many, but I've done close to that many. I just gotta grab what's available, but. I have a fun tidbit for you, and only you, because nobody else fucking gives a shit. Hmm. The inventor of Kool-Aid was born in Iowa.
Oh, yeah, I think I knew that.
He did not invent Kool-Aid until he had moved to Nebraska, but he was born in Iowa.
A lot of cool things, sliced bread, the trampoline, lots of cool things have been invented in Iowa.
Like I said, only interesting to you. There you are.
Yeah.
How's your week been?
Good. So
not as good as your upcoming week.
No, yeah, that's going to be real fun this weekend when we go to Chicago. We go to Medieval
Times. We go to Chicago. We go to Medieval Times.
I'd say the last week went, you know, pretty good, making some progress on getting a permanent office here, you know, rather than working from home or working in a temporary space.
So
that's been nice. It's a little scary though, right? Because you know, once you've got all that arranged, like now you're on the hook for, you know, a lot of things.
Yeah.
So
signing a lease is a thing.
Yeah. And, you know, so I've been doing this, you know, some of the people that I've worked with as an intern clear back even to January, I'm still working with, right? So it feels like I've been doing this job since the beginning of the year, even though, you know, most of it was as an intern. Now that I have my license, I'm really just doing the same job I was doing with mostly the same people too. So I feel confident that, I mean, I don't have any reason to think that, you know, in a given month, I won't see enough clients to make enough money to pay the rent or whatever, but that's just not a thing I had to think about for the last 8 months. And now I do. So it's a little, you know, it's kind of a new wrinkle in the whole psychology of it, but I'm sure it'll be fine, and I'm kind of excited about it. And I'm kind of looking forward though to the time where I've already been doing it for 3, 4, 6 months, and every month went by without a hitch. You know, it's like, okay. Yeah. So this is I don't have to really worry about this.
If you do end up, I don't think you will, but if you do end up in that situation, I am willing to front the money for a month or two in exchange for being able to install a one-way mirror so I can watch all your sessions secretly from behind that. Like some sort of super villain.
Oh.
Just keep it in mind. You don't got to say yes or no at this point. I'm just saying, if you find yourself needing funds, I can hook you up.
Nah, I think I'll be all right. The thing is,
just keep it in your back pocket. Just know you've got options. A support network, as it were.
And someday, and that day may never come, I may have to ask you for a favor.
A dropout show called Make Some Noise that I think I've talked about before, that's just improv prompts. There was a new episode last night, and one of them was the Godfather is annoyed making a deal, and he's annoyed that nobody brought him a snack. And so they had the whole thing, like, the day of my daughter's wedding, and you see those little shrimp things going around. You didn't think maybe you could sweeten the deal? I paid for them, but they're going fast, and I have to sit here with you. I believe the button on it was, you could have made me an omelet I couldn't refuse.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, Dropout is probably my favorite streaming service right now. I'm not going to say it's the one I watch the most, but it's probably my favorite.
Mm.
And they're always coming up with new shows. Do you watch anything?
I'm thinking. I mean, yes, but I don't think anything that would interest you or our listeners probably. And there was a lot of video game playing, so.
DLC coming out for Diablo 4. Are you so excited?
No. I mean, we might. So when you
got
said
a new class in it, you'll have another chance to play an electricity wizard.
When you said your winter game might be
Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah. I mentioned that to Abby, because I think I've said on here before that we were initially excited about it, then we weren't, and then we kind of were again, and we're still in the we think we want to try this out, but we haven't decided when. And you know, that thing about a winter video game, we have that too, right? It's like we've got great nostalgic feelings about playing certain video games over the winter, like when Skyrim first came out or whatever. And so, yeah, you do think, what's my winter video game going to be? And Sometimes it's a game we've already been playing and we just look forward to being locked in when it's snowing and playing that game. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times there's a new one, like, you know, we look forward to. So maybe we'll do that. I think we thought the winter video game would be, Abby's been wanting to play one of the, there's a couple pirate games out, right? Where you have a ship and you.
Yeah. I don't know that there are any good ones.
Well, that's kind of what, that's the conclusion she's coming to. Is that,
or any real single player ones. I mean, technically you can, but there's Sea of Thieves, which is very popular, but it is largely meant to be played with other people online. Mm. You can technically do it on your own, but like you're way more limited in what you can do because you don't have a crew in the same way. Mm-hmm. And then there's Skull and Bones, which apparently sucks.
Yeah. So I don't think that's, we're going to go that way. So, and I don't think there's anything else. So I think it was just going to be a deal like, well, we'll play Diablo. Cause like you said, there's a new thing. It doesn't sound very exciting to us, but we like playing together. So maybe that's what we do, but we could also couch co-op, you know,
You couch co-op Baldur's Gate 3?
That's my understanding.
Oh, cool. I wasn't sure. No. This has come up with a couple of things. You can definitely play online co-op. Like theoretically we could play together. I don't know if they have cross platform, but theoretically we could. But I very much just want to play it myself, at least the first time. Cause it's all about your decisions. And I'm like, I want to be the one to decide.
Well, okay. But see, when Abby and I play, she does.
Yeah, you're just an NPC. Just an NPC.
She does basically make all the decisions.
Yeah, fine. If I had one of you at home, that'd be fine. My wife has like a spine and preferences and
things. It's not about having a spine. It's just about, now there have been times where it's like, hey, let's play one where you make all the decisions. And that's happened. I don't really get into it much. So
crash and burn.
That's fine. I don't care. You know, I like to play. One of the reasons I like to play with her is so that I can just enjoy the experience of doing the stuff and I don't have to sit there and think about what the consequences are going to be.
Be a little electricity wizard.
Yeah. I don't care. You know,
I'm actually playing a game that's kind of fun. It's a game that showed up on Game Pass and I looked at it and I was like, eh, whatever. I don't care. Which is, I'm very happy these days because I have too many games there. But then I saw a couple different reviews from the normal sources I do, and they were all pretty much the same, which is like nothing really stands out about it, but it all gels in a way that's just really fun. And I was like, well, fuck, I have to try. And it is really fun. It's an action adventure game in which you play a lawyer from Vienna on vacation in a small, I think, German town.
Oh. Okay.
So the premise is at some 3 years from the present, 3 years ago, in and around this village, these portals opened up and monsters started coming out, and there were these dungeons in the portals. And so naturally they turned it into a tourist attraction. And like magic works, but like only there. And so people just show up and they go in the portals and fight monsters, and they're called slayers, and they just do it. It's a tourist thing. And you're literally a junior partner named Luisa in a law firm in Vienna, and you decided you needed something more exciting, so you came out for vacation and do this. And so you spend part of your day going into dungeons and fighting, and there's lots of puzzles and stuff too. And then the other part of your day is spending time with people in town and like making friends and stuff. It's very similar to like the Persona games in that way, except it's real-time combat. And it's weirdly authentic to the idea. Like the first day you show up, you go in your first dungeon and complications happen and you almost die, and like that night your character is literally like, tomorrow I'm gonna get a train ticket, I'm gonna go home, I don't know what the hell I was thinking, I almost died, this is insane. But then the next morning they talk to somebody who's like, you know, stick it out one more day and see what happens. And then you sort of come around to it, and there's a lot about like what made you choose to do it and why you're there. And it's not, I mean, you do have dialogue options, but it's not one of those where like you're choosing the character so much. Except I guess you are choosing who you make relationships with, but it's just kind of fun. I don't know. It's a good blend. I like it.
It's called what again?
Dungeons of Hinterberg.
So this place is like Westworld, except portals to actual other dimensions where you're actually fighting things.
Although there's definitely hinky shit in the background. Because like things are starting to, like the first part of the reason I almost died is we went through the thing. I had a guide with me and he's like, this is not how it normally looks. I don't know what's going on. And then there's like, yeah, there's just mysterious things. I recently ran into a thing where I was like, something weird is here. And I talked to people about it. And then the next day, apropos of nothing, the mayor showed up and gave me money and shit. Like there's a conspiracy somewhere in the background of this shit. And we'll see. And I was a little stressed because I tried to play the Persona games and I get very stressed because you can only make so many decisions. Like every afternoon, how are you going to spend your time? And spending time doing one thing is not spending your time doing something else. And that stresses me out because there's a calendar. Like you only have so many days or whatever. But I found out when I looked it up, it appears that despite this being your vacation, there's no limit to how long you can be there. So now I'm like, so I just do what I want to do, and eventually I can do it all. It's fine. It's a little hard sometimes for me, but not too bad. I'm not very good at this kind of stuff. So.
At what kind of stuff?
Games that require hand-eye coordination.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's why.
This one has, like, dodge rolls and shit like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Abby doesn't really like... That's why she puts everything on the lowest difficulty, because she's not there to master the controller or whatever. That's not the point.
I often do, and my preference is a game where I can control it on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and I used to just set everything to the easiest. I don't now, because I like, if it's too easy in some games, you miss out on things. Mm-hmm. Like crafting a build that is particularly cool. I don't want it to be like I have to build it this way or it's not going to work. But things like, oh, am I going to specialize in this or this? If the difficulty is low enough, it absolutely doesn't matter.
Mm.
And then I don't feel like, oh, I was clever in how I put these things together.
Right.
And I like that. And I like to use them. Like this game, it has your weapons and armor and stuff, but like it has charms, it has spells, which are used in different ways and things. And like, those things matter, and if it was too easy, I'm not sure they would. But I really like a game where I can set it at like normal, and then anytime something's hard, I drop it to easy long enough to get through that hard part and then switch it back.
Yeah, that's a thing.
I've actually had more trouble with the puzzles than the other, because some of the puzzles require a little hand-eye coordination in ways that I'm not good at. But they're very satisfying. I haven't looked up any of them, and there have been some where I've had to stand around for a while and be like, well, what the fuck do I do? But I figured them all out so far.
Is the puzzle aspect like a really kind of strong aspect of it, or?
Yes. The dungeons are a lot of puzzles, and then in between puzzles there are fights. It's one of those games where when there's a fight, like a barrier appears around everything, and all that happens is that fight until it's done. And then there's no more monsters around until the next time you're in a designated place for fighting. And in between that, it's just lots of puzzles of how you get further on. And the dungeons are all different themes. And I said you get spells. You get two spells per region. There's four regions of the game, and in each, and 25 dungeons in the various regions. And in each region, while you're there, you have two spells. And all the puzzles and stuff are very much tied to those spells. That's pretty neat.
Sounds like fun, but it's only for Windows and Xbox, huh?
I don't know. Is it? Oh.
I think so.
Okay. I mean, you looked it up, so. I mean, presumably, since you said that.
Well, but you never know what if these sources are right or if they're up to date or what.
If it gets popular enough, it might move around somewhere else. But also, we finally finished Harold Halibut.
Oh.
Was weird. The third act of that game just took a hard left, both in terms of plot and in terms of pacing and in terms of, like, so much of the last chapter or two was almost entirely cutscene, and they had some definite things they wanted to sort of say, and so I guess I get it, but I think it's a good game. You really got to sit down and sort of play it out within a few days, I think, because after a while it just drags, because it's I think it's meant to be very sort of slow and plodding, because it's supposed to evoke that feeling of sort of mindless bureaucracy in some ways. But it's also very clearly of somebody's vision. Like, they were definitely going for something like that. But we have finally finished that. But I didn't even mean to talk so much about video games, because I watched a bunch of stuff.
Okay.
We finished last night Reservation Dogs.
Oh, finished it.
Yep. All done.
What are your thoughts?
Mr. Rogan, we already have been having a lot of conversation about it. There is a growing category of TV shows that I basically would describe as TV shows that have consciously, like, noticeably consciously changed my view of the world and myself. I'm sure there are things, especially from my younger days, that have a stronger influence on me and my perceptions, but not consciously. But TV shows that have really, like, made me think about things differently and stuff. And so far, the list is Good Place, Ted Lasso, Reservation Dogs. I could make an argument for Our Flag Means Death, but I don't think so. It's a very good story. It's very funny. It's very clever. It has some very positive messages. I'm not sure it was mind-expanding, per se. It's very good. I highly recommend that show. But, no, I think it's those three right now. This was really, really good. And had some killer actors and some really killer guest stars. Lily Gladstone shows up. Graham Greene, Wes Studi, lots of them. Mid-Thunder, the woman who was the lead in Prey and was in Legion. She showed up in this, and she guest starred in this too. And then just other Bill Burr, Ethan Hawke, like weird choices in here, but it's all really good, and it's just really good storytelling. It's really kind of fascinating. So yeah, loved that. And then we started Trish's new show, because we each have one show at a time. You're gonna find this interesting. We started watching Night Country.
Night Country.
True Detective Season 4.
Yes.
Trish was watching it without me. And she watched two episodes, and she's like, "You want to check this out? It's really good." And I was like, "Yeah, sure, I'll check it out." Especially because, again, as we've discussed, it at least heavily implies, and you shouldn't spoil it, but I assume it very clearly seems to have supernatural elements to it. It's not just a true crime sort of vibe. And so we watched an episode. I'm not giving up yet, and it's only 6 episodes, so I think I can. All right. I'm very interested in the mystery. It is very well produced, very well shot. It looks gorgeous. It is very well acted, in my opinion. At least so far, in my opinion, it is not super well written. A lot of the dialogue feels very clunky and derivative to me. But more than that, and I was kind of hoping it was just like a lead-up thing in the first episode, but I saw that this season on, and it's going to be very integral. It's a story that is just made up of nothing but people with very sad lives being really shitty to each other, which is like the number one thing to cause me not to watch. At this point, I fucking hate Jodie Foster. I hate hating Jodie Foster. But I'm like, she sucks. I mean, she's got some good qualities, but she sucks. And everybody in it sucks. And they're all real awful to each other. And I think we're going to spend a fair bit of time on that. And I'm not here for that. So I'm trying, but it's right on a razor's edge.
Yeah.
So we will see. But it's only 6 episodes. I like that. I can probably make my way through that. Whether or not I will have enjoyed it, harder to say. Apparently, Trish wanted me to watch it. There's some video on YouTube. It might be Vanity Fair. I don't know. It's like an hour-long video of Robert Downey Jr. and Jodie Foster just talking about their acting careers and the choices of the roles they played and why and things like that. And it came up again last night because Trish said she talked about her character from Night Country, and she's like, she's not a good person. and how that can be tricky to play. Oh, let's talk some movies. This is all not nice. All right, got Night Country. Okay. Saw 2 movies. I'll talk about one real quick. So this has been sitting around for a while as people who know this sort of thing say this is one of the best action movies for action, especially in terms of like it being practical action and things like that. It's a movie, it's an Indonesian film called The Raid or The Raid Redemption. And I've been interested in seeing it for a while, and we finally did. It does have amazing action in it. I don't know. It's the British have a term, grotty. It's just very dirty and gross. And I mean, it is very violent, obviously. And there is some gore and stuff. I made a joke as the survivors were sort of hobbling their way out and they all had cuts in places and ears removed and stuff. And I, as it's happening, I was like, and a week later, they all died of sepsis. Like, I think it's exactly what it intended to be, and I think it's very good at what it intended to be. I don't know that I enjoyed it.
Not your thing, huh?
But if you like really good action, it's got really good action. I was expecting more vehicular action. I may have confused it with the sequel, because I remember seeing a shot of a car wrecking into things, and it was pretty badass. And this is all in one building, and there's no cars. So, I don't know. But, more than that, saw a little movie called Sympathy for the Devil. Very recent film. It is on Hulu.
Who's in that?
Nicolas Cage and Joel Kinnaman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All haven't right. seen it, but I heard of it, yeah.
But to explain this, I'd like to do a little skit.
Okay.
I would like you to play Nicolas Cage.
Okay.
Don't worry. You can pretty much stay silent if you want. I need a little tennis ball on a string to look at, pretending it's Nicolas Cage. And
sure.
That tennis ball.
Sure.
But if you want to throw in a cageism or whatever, feel free. Mr. Cage. Huge fan. I am Tony from relatively small movie studio, not unheard of, but relatively small. And we are so happy to have you on board on this. We got a great script. It is a first-time screenwriter wrote this script. It's called Sympathy for the Devil. He doesn't need to be involved. We bought it. It's fine. It's not a heavy plot thing. It's about a guy, who essentially kidnaps this other guy for reasons unknown. And to sort of like punish it. But we don't know what's going on and why. And the guy keeps protesting. He's not the guy you think he is, and all this. And eventually we find out whatever. It's not a ton of plot. It's just that going on for a while, which we think is perfect for you. Because you can do whatever you want in there. You can just Nick Cage the shit out of it. Whatever feels good to you. We do have Joel Kinnaman attached to play the other guy, but it's a pretty mild role. Kind of not his normal wheelhouse, honestly. Not that I'm a big fan. Don't tell him, though, because I'm telling him a different thing when we talk to him. But so we just want you to do your thing. It doesn't have to make sense, whatever. I will say your character is from South Boston. So if you want to attempt an accent every fifth scene, fine. But don't worry about it too much. If it drops in and out, we don't care. Also want to say we have an idea. And if you, you're going to have a red suit jacket and a real nice outfit and red hair, and we will very heavily in the marketing imply that you may or may not be the actual devil, and that's sort of the question of the movie. Not a thing at all. You will just be a dude, and it will be very obvious quite early you are not. Like, that's not actually a question the movie is trying to imply. Also, I know you're already thinking it, we cannot, since we are hiring you, afford the rights to the actual song, Sympathy for the Devil. So that won't appear anywhere in this. But mostly, we just want to give you a place where you can just Nick Cage the fuck out for an hour and a half. How does that sound? That's what this movie is.
Okay. Did you like it?
I did.
Okay.
Because I love watching Nick Cage the fuck out for an hour and a half. But, like, that's the thing. I don't, as with a lot of Nick Cage things, not all, but a lot of them, you can't call it a good movie, bad movie, or whatever. The only thing about, I will say this, near the end, Joel Kinnaman, who I am not a fan of, and I've seen quite a few things he's in, not a fan. Do not, I think he is very much an animatronic that you stick into a action-oriented leading man role when you cannot afford a human actor. I think he is barely competent, and the end. He does a really good job at the end of this. He sort of has a monologue and stuff that was more than I expected from him. But there's nothing to recommend this film, except Nick Cage nicks the fuck out for an hour and a half. And if you are somebody like me who will watch that, it's awesome. I mean, it's no, there. If you're picking a Nick Cage movie to watch, there are many better ones. But I've seen them. I've seen Con Air. I've seen Face Off. I've seen The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. Such a good
That is a good movie.
If you exhausted those, here we go. And he really does attempt a South Boston accent sometimes. Like, to the degree that in the first scene, I didn't think he had one, and then shortly after he did, and I was like, I just must not have been paying attention. But then later he very much didn't, and then later it came back again, and then later went away.
Was
again.
It even important to the plot that he was from South Boston? Was that even important?
Sort of. Sort of. I mean, it was... I don't want to spoil things, but it was one of those past coming back to haunt you things. And the past in question was South Boston. It could have been somewhere else, but the story of what happened in the past was all very Boston-focused. It was important to the story the way they told it. They very easily could have told it ever so slightly different, and it wouldn't need to be.
Well, also, I'm sure not everybody who lives in South Boston like talks.
Oh, absolutely. Like that, but... If you're asking if he needed to have the accent, no. Which apparently he occasionally realized and didn't. I mean, and this is the only actor I think I can say this about in the world. I think he was phoning it in this movie, and that's fine and entertaining. Huh. Nick Cage the fuck out in his sleep at this point. And that's fine with me.
So we've probably talked about this, but what is that? Why can he do that? I mean, why? I mean, there are a lot of people who are like you who could just watch Nick Cage do that specific, very signature thing that he does and be entertained by it. Are there other actors like that who can do that, just show up and do their thing and you can be entertained by it?
I've been thinking about this because recently I've discovered a YouTube channel called The Bad Movie Bible, and it is a lot of looking at bad movies as sort of genres and looking at their history. It's a little more in-depth than some of the other bad movie reviews I watch. And I've realized scenery chewing is an art.
Yeah, I'd say.
Now, it's not highly difficult. You mostly just have to be game. You just have to be willing to push it.
Well, you have to commit, though.
Exactly, yes. But that's the thing. It's less of a skill and more of a will thing. You're going to do it. But it's not like, oh, you're bad at overacting. Like, no, it's overacting. That's already the bad.
Right, but you also have to consider that this person's doing this over several takes usually, right? So...
Yeah.
And that's a lot harder. Like if you show up and you say, oh, I'm gonna nail this, I'm gonna really get this, and it's like, okay, let's do it again. You know, you gotta get yourself in that space all over again. You've gotta somehow make it seem as fresh and visceral as it was the first time. It's hard in movies to do that.
And it helps that Nick Cage, I think, is a certain brand of insane. He also comes from a rich privileged family. He's a Coppola.
Oh.
Nick Cage is his stage name. He's like Francis Ford Coppola's cousin or something.
I guess I didn't know that. I forgot that.
And he started life as a comedic actor. And often people going from dramatic to comedy or comedy to drama can really make something of it because that's sort of a conscious choice in your career. You didn't just fall into the slot you did. You're like, I want to do something different. And I think it has evolved over time, but he's just really good at scenery chewing. And I imagine he's the sort that scenery chews in his real life.
Oh.
So I think it's just very normal for him. And he's got a lot of experience. But there is something about, I just today was watching a thing on the history of a movie called Space Mutiny, which some of you who are Mystery Science Theater or Riff Tracks fans will know. It's a terrible, terrible film, sci-fi film out of the 80s. And the villain, I don't know the actor. I've never seen him in anything else. But he is, like, evil laughing until it looks like his skull's going to pop out of his head. And it's super entertaining. And this is the thing. When people – my wife has difficulty with this, although she's come around over the years. When we say, like, we like bad movies – sort of unironically, it's because there's and you can have like Donald Pleasance is a well-respected actor for all that he made 180 movies, almost all of which were bad, because he knows how to work it. He knows how to be a villain and to really put all into it, and that's often what I look for. I've talked before about, like, so bad it's good movies don't work if you're trying to do it on purpose. There has to be an earnest. You have to really be trying to do a thing. And at that point, the earnestness is entertaining, whether or not it is professional or good.
Well, yeah, but I think the connection you drew with comedy is apt, because comedy is also a thing where many times it's the commitment. It's the commitment that sells it, right? Like,
yeah,
you can have a funny line or whatever, but sometimes on paper, what's happening isn't funny. It's how it's being played. And a lot of times, as you just pointed out, it's that earnestness that's like, right? Like, this is an absurd situation that this person is taking absolutely seriously or whatever.
Yeah.
And
you get great ones in the other direction. Alec Baldwin, John Hamm. These are guys who started off as dramatic leading men and then really sort of pivoted their career into comedy and crush it in comedy.
Yeah.
Now, well, John Hamm always was a comedy nerd. Alec Baldwin, I think, just realized nobody wanted to see him as a leading man anymore. But
I'm thinking of, like, Peter Sellers, was in a lot of bad things, but you can just watch him. I was like,
yep.
Because I think, you know, we're calling it scenery chewing or whatever, but a lot of times it's just somehow, whatever the person's doing, even if it's super outlandish, there's an authenticity to it. Like, it's like, I believe this. I believe this thing that's happening. It's crazy. Yeah. It's insane, but I believe it. I don't feel like I'm watching a person pretending to be this insane, crazy person.
Yeah, you're oh, shit. They got a crazy person and put him in this movie. He can't act, but they still put a legitimate crazy person in this movie, which is right. Just like, he can't act.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. When it seems so authentic in an absurd situation, or if the person is being absurd, whatever, there's something, an irony in that that I think is deeply compelling and entertaining.
Well, this potentially goes back to the phrase I used before that I usually use to defend the movie Krull, which I love and a lot of people don't love. They act so hard.
Yeah.
I love when people act hard.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it's so interesting.
The Room. People hate The Room. The Room is an objectively terrible movie on every single level. Everyone in that movie is trying really hard. They are universally failing, but they are trying. Nobody is phoning it in. Even in some of the worst, most tepid deliveries, they are trying. And I really like that. It's the same, Carl, I always say, I'm like, they act really hard in that movie. They don't necessarily act good, but they act hard. And I love watching people act hard.
I think maybe people have an intuitive, they don't often have a conscious or very sophisticated understanding of it, but I think they have an intuitive understanding of how incredibly difficult it must be, especially in movies. I keep saying that because it's not like on stage. I've done acting in different contexts, and on stage, it's a lot easier to sort of imagine that you're in the actual space doing the actual thing, and also to execute whatever piece of craft that you've decided to execute for a given line or a given thing. It's just a lot easier in film because of the multiple takes and from different angles and everything else. It's a lot harder to get yourself there because you're immediately taken out of it every two or three minutes. And to play a part where the person watching is completely convinced you are that person, that's not as easy as it might sound. And I think people do kind of have an intuitive sense of how an amazing accomplishment it is for any actor on screen to be able to convince you that they are that person. Even in times, even when you have like Harrison Ford, where you're basically seeing Harrison Ford, right?
Yeah.
But you still believe he's whoever he's. Playing.
But that's I think the key is if they believe it. If they believe they're that person. Having nothing to do with acting ability.
Yeah.
It's a self-fulfilling thing. And I always wonder to a degree if there isn't, again, sort of an anthropological bent to why I like it. Because I like them as people. I like watching, like, it's not that I'm into the character necessarily. I am into that person who has decided to play that character that way.
Yeah, I get that a little too. Yeah,
I love over dramatics. Again, if it's as long as it's not wink at the camera.
Yeah.
Like if you're like, look how dumb I am, I'm out. And there's a whole genre of movies like that. Not it. Most Farrelly Brothers stuff. A lot of stuff that is intentionally genred as a comedy is that kind of thing. And it's not clever, and that's the joke. The joke is that it's bad. I'm like, no. You don't get to be in on the joke if that's the joke. Like, I also can just do a shitty job at things.
Yeah.
If that's the criteria, no, it's the trying that makes it, I get filled with a sort of sense of awe at times. Like The Room, I get filled with a sense of awe because I'm just like, how did this happen? Like, How could you try so hard and miss the mark so far? It's fascinating to me.
Yeah, it's
a little bit like watching a car crash. Car crash would be a lot less fun if the dude was like, I'm going to go run into that car now.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it still might for other reasons, but no, it's watching the accident, which made it kind of macabre. But and Nick Cage knows what he's. I mean, he is the guy that these hardcore crazy ass scenery chewing actors need to like climb a mountain and find his little hut up there and learn at his feet. He's the one.
Yeah. I mean, you can name others, I think, that have occupied that space, but I mean, he's right now
Peter Sellers is a great example.
Well, and maybe Jack Nicholson, maybe a little bit.
Yeah, I've been expanding my Jack Nicholson repertoire lately and finding I am less impressed with him as time goes on.
But Nicolas Cage is the guy. I mean, our cultural moment right now, he's the guy. You're right about that.
Yeah.
And but he's really good at it. I mean, like, yeah. I guess I don't
and
feel like
it's never not entertaining.
No, right.
Dude can act really well. I saw Leaving Las Vegas. He earned that Oscar. Like, this is his thing, and he's an expert at it. And it's never not entertaining. You can call it bad acting. You can call it overacting. Whatever, is never not entertaining.
But it is, I hesitate. I can totally understand it not being a person's thing. That's just a matter of taste. But for a person to suggest that he's actually not good at what he's doing, there's a craft here, right? He figured this out. He worked on it. And what he's doing would be incredibly hard for someone who wasn't him, who has worked so hard on this for many, many years. I realize some people might not like it. And I hate to say they don't get it, because that sounds like elitist BS, but it's, to suggest that he hasn't crafted this and he is not achieving something here that he's specifically going after that millions of people see and go, yeah, I get that. And I like that. I mean, if you don't like it, that's fine. I get that. I don't always like his performances either, but I would never suggest that he doesn't know what he's doing or that what he's doing isn't very deliberate and crafted very well.
Well, and this whole idea of like bad movies, and there are people who are like, I only like good movies. and don't get me wrong. I'm willing to say, I'm willing to achieve some level of objective benchmark for good or bad movies. Hmm. But like within that, I don't think you can say I just like the good, like, because there are so many moving pieces. Trish, I bring Trish along on a lot of my bad movies. More and more as time goes on, because she's adjusting more. But there are some she's like, these are too bad. And there are some that I'm like, it's not a topic for her. She would find it boring or whatever. But like, recently, I don't think I've talked to you about this. In my youth, in the 80s, a movie came out. And I remember seeing trailers for it. It was called Gymkata.
Never heard of it.
Of course not.
Well, I was in the 80s too.
This I didn't realize, since I've grown up with it forever, that it's a real deep cut, but it's a real deep cut. Oh, although okay. I've never seen it.
Oh.
Because I was too young, and because it would have been like the mid 80s. Because what happened was, the 84 Olympics happened.
Mm-hmm.
And for a split second, everybody was super excited about gymnastics.
Yeah.
So they hired an actual gold medal gymnast who had never acted in his life or since to play the lead in an insanely 80s action movie, where the premise is he's a very accomplished gymnast who's being taught a mix of martial arts and gymnastics so that he can go into this country and do spy related things, except it's all gymnastics. And it's, he fights people with gymnastics, which only works if you have scenes like he fights people in the middle of a village square where there's a monument in the village square that is weirdly the exact shape and size of a pommel horse. Or there's an alleyway that for some reason has uneven parallel bars in it. Or one of the ninjas he's fighting ducks down so he can do a roll over their back and kick another guy. And it's just so terrible. They invent this fake country called Parmistan. It's, and for years I wanted to see it, but it was never anywhere. And I would look every once in a while. I'd do a search on like Roku or just watch it. And it's just not anywhere. And I'm like, well, fuck me. And then for some reason, Screen Junkies did an honest trailer of it recently. And I was like, I haven't checked in a few years. I'll check again. And it's fucking out there for like $3 rental on Amazon.
Hmm.
So I haven't watched it yet because I'm trying to get Trish involved. And she's like, maybe. But then I showed her the trailer and she's like, I don't know. It looks really bad. And I was like, to me, that was the most pointless sentence. Yes. It's really bad. Sorry, did you not think? Like, that's why you watch it. Like, that's why I want to. If somehow they did this good, I don't know that I'd want to see it. But, like, it's a bad movie. I'll bet it's going to be real fun. And it's just the thing to say, like, I don't like movies of poor quality. Like, I don't think that's really a thing. Or you're watching movies weird. Like, I only watch movies for the production values or something. Like, no, you can not like or like whatever you want, but it's such a weird, it's like when a person says their sexual orientation is super straight. You remember this term?
Yes.
Yeah, where you're only attracted to people who were born biologically assigned the opposite sex at birth. And the immediate response to that is, but what if you can't tell? Mm-hmm. How would you know? It's the same thing. It's like, so you've seen every movie that is not quality made? Like, I mean, it's just such a weird, because bad movies defy specific genre or actor or production. Like, there are some really well-produced, really terrible movies.
And well, I mean, there's a level of this,
really
though,
well-made that's like, movies that aren't very good.
Right. There's a level of this that's the same as saying, well, I only like good art. It's like, but what... What is that really?
Very much.
Right. Exactly. So there's a level
like,
of
it. Discuss what makes good art and bad art as you'd like.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about what you like, that's
it's a
very arbitrary rubric.
Yeah, very much so.
And it honestly, there's this whiff of I only like movies that other people say it's okay to like.
Yeah, right. Yep. There's a little bit of that in there, it seems like.
And don't get me wrong, if you see the trailer for Gymkhana and you're like, I don't think I want to see that, I'm like, that's fair. It's absolutely fair. But if you're like, I don't want to see it because it's bad, I'm like, eh.
Well, I mean, I really awesome. You know, I when I think of my own art consumption, you know, if I want to subject myself to, say, a book or a movie or whatever, or even a stand in front of a piece of art and look at it, it's very subjective, right? It's like, I'm going to get something out of this. And so I almost really don't think of it in terms of good or bad. It's like, well, this is useful. You know, this is does something for me, is edifying for me, or it's not, which seems like a very subjective and personal thing. So I figure for someone else, maybe it will, maybe it won't. So, you know, if I judge anything on quality, it's usually it has to do with what I perceive, how much craft it was put into, like, right? Like how, and it's not about how hard someone worked on it either. It's just about, like with, I was just saying a little bit ago with Nicolas Cage, I can tell he's thinking about it. He's sort of workshopping it in his head. You know what I mean? I can tell there's some craft there. And then when he puts that craft in it and it resonates with me, I appreciate that. Right.
Yeah, see, I'm much more measured by effort. But, like, Roadhouse, not the new bullshit with Jake Gyllenhaal that I refuse to watch. The original Roadhouse, That movie is awesome. That movie is incredible. I recommend it to anyone. It is a hell of a time. It is really entertaining. It is objectively a shit movie. It is real bad. But I wouldn't go so far. I wouldn't say I enjoy it because it's bad. It's not an ironic, like, it's just a fun time. And it's a poor movie, but it's a really entertaining and exciting movie. And that you then get the other side with people who are like, I believe the phrase there usually is, it's not art. It's not high art or whatever. Yeah,
high art,
and these are the people who are basically saying, I only like bad movies. It's the same thing. It's like, that's not good and bad in the context of movies is not a good rubric for determining if you like them.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it can encompass so many things. I mean, and really people just need to search their souls more for what it is about movies that they like or don't like.
But, you know, you and I have talked about this, how sometimes the thing you like, any piece of art, a book, movie, something hanging on the wall, you like it in that time and place for a specific reason that's happening to you right then. You probably would have hated it earlier. Down the road, you'll probably hate it. But right now, it speaks to something. And if it speaks to it so powerfully that it builds a little, you know, nostalgia or whatever, then you probably will always like it. But later on, you'll admit, okay, I admit this is terrible, but this is why it, you know, I still carry something in my heart for it, because at this time in my life, this song was playing on the radio. It's a terrible, crappy song, but it resonated with me at the time. And so I'm always going to love it. You know, that happens too. That happens too.
In the mid 2000s, at the height of American Idol fame and right in the middle of George W. Bush's presidency, there was a movie that came out called American Dreams. With a Z on the end.
Yeah.
And it was, we went and saw it in the theater. And it was just about an American Idol style contest where, in order to prop up his ratings, the president, who was Dennis Quaid looking and acting exactly like George W. Bush, was a guest judge on the show. Mandy Moore was the sort of Britney Spears analog. Hugh Grant was the Simon Cowell analog. We went to the theater to see it, and it was wonderful. It resonated with me so strong. It was parodying a lot and venting a lot of issues that I had and all that. I haven't seen it since. Even from just what I remember about it, I'm like, that sounds terrible. I think I would hate it now. But it was very much something I needed at the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I really enjoyed it for that. All of this being said, I have recently started messing around with a free with ad streaming service called Fossum, which is just the word awesome with F in front. It's supposed to stand for free awesome, I think. I'm using that streaming app because it has a level of real terrible, nasty, trashy, shitty movies that, like, so bad, like, Tubi won't air this kind of thing. And they are so bad that regardless of how, like, these might be the only movies that, like, I'm kind of ashamed to be watching. They're so bad, and they're in such poor taste. And the reasons I watch them are many and varied and strange, some of which are odd, and some of which are prurient, some of which are not, and some of which I don't understand myself. I'll be watching and be like, why am I watching? But I keep watching. If my mental health was in a more stable place, I might waste some of my therapist's time trying to drill down into why I'm watching these. It is another thing where I like novelty, and I like movies attempting to be transgressive, but there's a real limited range of where I'm okay with that. Like, you can go too far real fast for what I'm comfortable with. But so there do still exist things that I'm like, I like it, but I feel bad that I like it. Like, there's bad movies, and then there's whatever the hell this is.
Mm-hmm.
So even I am not immune to getting caught up in the quality of films or whatever. But yeah, no, if you like watching Nicolas Cage the fuck out of things, and you haven't already seen The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, do Sympathy for the Devil. Very much in that vein and entertaining in that way. First watch, Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. This is a phenomenal film. It's very well produced. It's very well acted all around. It has Pedro Pascal in the other lead, and he and Nick Cage just have the most amazing chemistry. Again, as I think you have mentioned, because Pedro Pascal has chemistry with everybody everywhere all the time.
He pretty much does, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I can't find an exception so far.
Yeah, me neither.
In all the things I've seen.
Me neither. He's a very charismatic guy.
It's a phenomenal movie, and it is a movie that gets Nick Cage, and it's a movie in which Nick Cage also gets Nick Cage, which is not always the case. Sometimes Nick Cage thinks he's giving a type of performance, and that's not the type of performance he's giving.
No.
Because he's a crazy. He's got a crazy going on.
Okay.
He's in there. Buying dinosaur skulls and shit. He's out there. But
do you ever wonder if you had the money, because I'm thinking of, you know, times I've been looking online or even before there was online, and I see a thing and I think, oh, that's really cool. Now, I almost immediately think better of it, or later on I think, what was I thinking? But if in that moment I have all the money in the world, and I thought to myself, heck with it, I'm going to get that thing. I mean, do you think if you look back on your life and some of the things that you've been kind of, this piqued your interest when you first saw it, but then you immediately forgot about it because it's not like you would ever actually have the money. But what if you did? Do you think you'd have a collection of dumb things? Because I think I might have a collection of dumb things if it were me. I kind of think I would.
If this happened about 10 or more years ago, something recently in my view of, I mean, don't get me wrong, I still have a ton of possessions, but I don't have any, I keep them around for their functionality.
Yeah.
And I'm always buying more shit. Oh, I need something that's kind of like this. All right, I'll buy a new thing rather than making things I have work. But I don't have a lot of collections. I don't have a lot of decoration, stuff like that.
Yeah, neither do I.
Just like cool shit, like statues of Batman or whatever. Yeah. I don't.
I mean,
there's a time where I would have had that.
I
have things around that are still sort of that.
Yeah, and people have bought me things for sure, but I'm very much not a materialistic person. However, I know I have had moments where I see a thing and I just think it's so incredibly cool, at least in that moment. And
again,
it's not like I was even thinking about I need to go buy one of those or anything like that. But sometimes I wonder, well, what if I had more means? I think if I did, since I'm not a very materialistic person, I still don't think I would buy very many things because I just don't like having a lot of things.
Yeah.
But just that once in a while, when you see something and you're like, man, that's
and
cool.
I do it every once in a while. And I'm at a point where I largely can. I have the means. Mm. I mean, for the level of stuff that I'm like that. Yeah. And sometimes I do. But that the late adoption thing is part of it. I've worked very hard at be like, sleep on it.
Yeah.
And that's because I made a lot of other. In fact, I'm watching the Nibblings next door, watching them doing that. They don't have a lot of money, and they are spending it on the dumbest shit that they are going to get sick of in a week. But you can't explain that to them.
No. And I remember being that age, too. I remember going places and buying junk, and it's like, oh, this was a mistake. And I learned, right? I learned after that.
But it's a very gradual learning.
Yeah, you do have to learn it.
Because then there was a point where, okay, I'm not buying stuffed animals all the time, but I'm buying other things.
Right.
And honestly, we lived in the age that gave birth to crowdfunding. And a lot of us went through a phase where we were donating to every fucking Kickstarter everywhere. And a lot of us have learned. Well, first of all, that some of it's never going to happen. And also that some of it you don't really need.
Right.
And I mean, I used to like, I could see it some, but then you got things like Nick Cage, who spends that kind of money and then runs out of money.
Oh, yeah.
Dude has had major financial problems, yeah, stemming at least partially from buying a dinosaur skull. But that becomes a, you know, you think the money's never going to run out kind of thing when you become a huge star. That's more complicated. But, we are super over time and did not get to the one email we have, which is disappointing, but we had some shit to talk about. So deal with it, people. And you will, because you love us, because that's why you listen, because why the hell else would you be listening?
Yeah.
We appreciate that. Please email us, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever you want. I didn't explain the show, but you get it. Email us with stuff so we can talk about it. Go to the blog, magicaltalkinghat.com. Go to YouTube, comment there. Tell us your thoughts on these things, because our thoughts are bad. Also, just remember, Big Bird and the Kool-Aid Man, love you.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.